Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life. My name is Jawanza. Wow, I've been waiting for this show. Everybody, I want to make sure that you understand that the show that you are about to hear is a show that could really, truly change your life. I would even venture to say, and I'm going to do things a little bit different this time. Normally, I wait till the end of the show to make the announcements, but I'm going to announce this several times throughout the show because just for whatever reason, if you can't stick around and listen to the whole show, I don't want you to miss the information concerning this workshop that's coming up on Saturday, June the 17th. I'm going to venture to say that this workshop that we'll be talking about today could very well be the most important workshop that you will ever attend in your life. Yeah, I'm going on record as saying that. This workshop could potentially be the most important workshop that you attend in your whole entire life. We're going to be talking about relationships. And my special guest today is Orwahehi Meturan Comet. That's Dr. Orwahehi Meturan Comet. And in case you're just tuning in for the very first time, you're not familiar with him, I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's been a member of the Osiriset Society since 1975. He was appointed Orwa, which is Paramount King, by Shechem Meshechem Ra-Unefer Amen, who is Chief Priest and King of the Osiriset Society. And as Orwa, he's responsible for guiding the lives of Osiriset's members and the society's activities in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He's a member of the society's Carrie-Head Priesthood and headed Osiriset's African Support Project. He holds a bachelor's degree in African American Studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University. He's now just more recently obtained his doctorate degree, and we're just blessed to have another opportunity to sit and speak with, learn from, glean from, grow with Dr. Orwahehi Meturan Comet. Dr. Comet, Orwa, it's great to have you back. Thanks for being my guest again today.
Can you hear me well?
No, not really.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Can hear you much better. Okay,
good.
Thank you so much. Great to have you back.
Thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. As I mentioned to the listeners, that this show could very well be the prerequisite or the precursor to a workshop that potentially could be the most important workshop that the listeners could actually ever attend in their life. And I say that very strong. I'm very confident in that because we're going to be talking about relationships. And when you talk about relationships, you have different types of relationships, of course. But when you're relating to people, I mean, at its basic level, I mean, you can have a relationship, a man and a woman relationship is going to create a child or children. Out of that comes the family. Then out of that comes the community, and it grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. So we can really say that this could be the most important relationship workshop or workshop period ever. So I want to make sure that people understand that, and I'm going to make sure that I give the information in the beginning, the middle, and the end, so that in case you have to early, you have the information. Brother Orwa, thank you for being again my guest today. I just want to thank you so much because this workshop is really is exciting just to even talk about the 2017 African Spiritual Relationships Conference, and I'll give the information now, and then we can get into the interview. That's going to be held at the Synbeb Wellness Complex in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, June the 17th, and Sunday, June the 18th. Okay, so it's preparation for building, maintaining your African spiritual relationship. Again, that's preparation for building and maintaining your African spiritual relationship, and there's going to be a lot of information covered there. They're going to teach you how to identify. It's going to be about identifying traditional African factors which add value to your health, your well-being, and successful functioning in relationships with your partners, your family, and your community, And the guest presenter is going to be Queen Mother Nesut Marissa Amen. So we're going to tell you all about this fabulous workshop. Again, it's going to be at the Sinbev Wellness Complex. That's at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. And that's Northwest. And that zip code there, in case you need to map quest to get there, is 20011. Now, just so that you don't show up, and so I thought it was free. No, the singles for singles is $70. For couples is $125. And children between 5 and 12 get in free. But let me say this, that for the cost, I mean, you can't even put a price. Okay, so we're going to tell you all about it. We're going to get into this and tell you what's going to be offered at this. And I wish I could be there, actually, but I guarantee you that you won't regret going. And after you hear this interview, I know that you're going to want to be there. Brother Orwa, again, tell us about this workshop. I mean, because we're going to be talking about relationships at the workshop. I mean, where do you begin? I mean, this is going to be so very, very, very powerful. And that's going to be Saturday, June the 17th. Let's talk about relationships so that people we can give the people a taste of what they're going to get at the workshop on the 17th. When we talk about relationships, let's talk about, if we can, just the purpose of relationships. We can start there if you like. What is the purpose of relationships, and from the Kemetic traditional African perspective?
Okay, very good. Thank you. Well, first, let's give some further background in terms of what's going to be taking place at the event. It's not really a workshop. It's a conference. And it's not just the 17th. It's also the 17th and the 18th. For that $70, you get 2 days of workshops, which include seven different presentations that will take place during the course of those 2 days. There's also materials that you'll get in terms of tools that you can use to help further your success in a relationship. If you individually value the tools themselves that you'll be receiving, they total well over the $70 that you would pay for the 2 days. And actually, just since we're at the June the 9th, if they pay by tomorrow, June the 10th, you can get a 10% discount for pre-registration. And all of that's on the, you have the website information, correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. So you can get that information out. But if they go online,
yes,
and register by tomorrow, then they can get a 10% discount on the registration. So now we got that out of the way. Let's now address the importance of relationships from the African perspective, meaning that traditionally, all over the world, people understood and understand that family is the basis of society. And the more indigenous communities, the more important the family. And family is just not the individuals that we call here the nuclear family, but family also includes what we also call the extended family or the clan, et cetera, depending on the cultural background where the person comes from. But the important thing is that family provides the stability for society. The more stable the society, the more stable the families are in that society. If you have a society where there's a lack of stability in the family, you can also appreciate and expect there's going to be a lack of stability in the society itself. Now, if we look at the, I don't have the current figures, but years ago, when we looked at these numbers, it was less than 50% of all marriages more than 50% of all marriages were in divorce, meaning that people were not coming together. And now the numbers are such that fewer and fewer people are even going through the trouble of getting married. So we look at the society we live in, and we wonder why we have some of the problems or other problems that we have. Well, it has to do a lot with the lack of stability in the family structure. I mean, we always hear the stories about the problems that single-family households cause within for children growing up as they try to matriculate through life, et cetera. Well, it's just not the single-family household the children are affected, but the whole societal impact that's affected. I mean, we look at what's the root of the problem. I mean, what's causing all these people in all these different circumstances and all these different families either not come together or not stay together when they come together? And we have to look at
the values.
Can you hear me?
I just want to say you're a little muffled. I just wanted to make sure that everybody can hear you okay. I don't know if there's anything that's on your end that can be done on that, but just wanted to. I don't know if it's location, you know, where you are, but if it's that, I just wanted to make you aware of that. Maybe speaking up a little bit might help a little bit.
Okay, is that better?
Let me hear you a little bit. Okay, go ahead, continue.
Okay, good. So the problem is that, but what is it that is at the root of all these problems that we're experiencing in the families and in society? Well, it's the culture. You know, it's like if you have a pond, and you pull some fish out of the pond, and one out of every 100 fish you pull out has an issue, then you would say, well, there's something wrong with this fish. But if you have a pond, and 60% of all the fish you pull out are having issues, then you say there's something wrong with the pond. It's that which is nourishing the fish. So it's the culture, it's the Western culture that is the problem that we have in our relationships. So for all those who are listening to my words right now, if you are in a mate relationship, if you're sitting there with your mate, I want you to look at your mate now and say, there's nothing wrong with you, honey. There's nothing wrong with you. The problem is the culture that we've been bred through, the mate that we've been feeding off of, the environment that's been nurturing us, has not produced or prepared us successfully for this challenge. Let's look at it. In the society, if a person does not go to school, you can expect that they're going to have trouble earning a living in the society. And the more education you get, the greater the opportunities you're going to have in terms of learning a living. People spend at least 12 years trying to finish high school. And then most people are now trying to go off to college for another 4 years or some training or whatever. The more training you have, the better the opportunity is for you to earn a living in society. But then all those classes that we take, those 12 years of high school, up to high school, 4 years of post-secondary school, et cetera, there's no training engaged in there on to teach people how to function in relationships. People are taught how to earn a living, but people are not taught how to live. And then we wonder why we have the challenges and the problems we have in our families and in relationships, and we want to put it on the person. So it's not the person. It's a lack of education. It's a lack of training. We wouldn't expect if a person goes to school, gets a master's degree or a PhD in physics, for example, and we put them in a lab and they don't know how to conduct the experiments, then we can say, well, there's something wrong with the person's training. Because they have the certification, but maybe they haven't been taught on the job. Well, the problem becomes that in terms of relationships, everything that we learn is learned through on-the-job training. Everything that we learn is learned through observation, and we could be observing situations and individuals which are not malfunctioning already, and then we're taking in those lessons, and we're trying to apply those lessons that are already deficient towards solving a problem that we're having in our relationships. So we have to look at the problem is that with the lack of training, the lack of development, the lack of cultivation, but all that goes back to the culture itself. All that goes back to Western society. Because in Western society, the problem has always been rooted, historically has been rooted in the fact that women have never been given an equal access to opportunities and authority in Western society. Even today, and this is what, 2,000 years after, 3,000 years basically after folks came on in, then we have this problem with women still trying to reach across and tap into the glass ceiling. That's the whole thing about the person who was trying to become president, right? They're now rooting that problem largely on the fact of misogyny, right? Men are just not willing, or people just not willing to, in Western culture, to accept a woman as having equal access or equal abilities or to get equal pay or whatever the situation may be. So that's a problem in Western culture, and it permeates throughout the whole culture. So when we go into relationships now, then we have issues where people are believing that the man, quote-unquote, should call the shots, should make the decisions, et cetera, and the woman should just follow, be quiet, et cetera. Women today aren't, they're challenging all these social norms, but the norms are the problem. They're not normal to African culture. They're normal in Western culture. And let me give you an example. In African culture, in traditional African culture, especially amongst the people, for example, I'll just use the Asante Nation as an example. This is true not just for the Asante, but it's true across the African continent. But within the Asante Nation, for example, the society is structured such that there's a king who's the monarch of the society, but then there's a queen mother who is his peer in terms of ruling the society. And not only that is she the peer, but the same structure falls through all levels of the society. Every time you have a position where there's a man, you have a comparable position for a woman. So within that society, in that structure, you see that women are given an equal foot in terms of being able to wield power and authority and make decisions in society. But even more importantly, amongst the Asante, for example, the king is chosen by the queen mother. So not only is she his co-equal in terms of the direction of society, but she's the one who determines who the king is going to be, who the man is going to be. And if there's no man suitable to assume the throne, she has the right to rule the nation in her own right as the queen mother. So we can see there that within that kind of structure, that kind of social structure in traditional Africa, that women have, there's a different dynamic. So there's no glass ceiling in terms of women not being access to roles of an authority and power. That women are, by the nature of society, the structure of society, have the same levels of access. So we see this throughout Africa, traditional Africa. So this is what we're trying to bring to the conference on the 16th and 17th, next Saturday and Sunday, that as African people, we have to go back to our roots. The problem we have is because we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. The round hole would be the culture. But we're not acclimated to this culture. And when we're forced into this, we're forced to peg into the hole, it doesn't work so well because the hole itself doesn't have the necessary tools to provide for successful relationships. Western culture is the problem of our relationships, and the solution is for us to look back at our African past and see, well, how was it that not only the Africans were able to hold on to the relationships, and in traditional Africa, that was a very strong element. You know, all the time, the historians, when they travel, especially Europeans coming to Africa, they always talk about how stable the societies were. Well, in today's Africa, because of the westernization of today's Africa, we're now beginning to see the same problems that we have in Western culture in terms of families, people meeting it and coming together based on likes and dislikes, and then not understanding, well, who is it that I'm meeting? What's the purpose of relationship? What's the purpose of life itself? In Western culture, there's no understanding of that. In traditional Africa, we all understood and understand that we all come to Earth as reflections and manifestations of God. And as such, our sojourn on Earth is for us to become vehicles through which that divine essence, which is our true identity, can be made manifest in our lives. So in other words, we all come to earth to become a God-man or a God-woman. So what's the purpose of relationships then? What's the purpose of every situation we come across in life? It's to provide us with the opportunities to manifest that divinity. We manifest the divinity through our works, meaning nobody is given anything in life. If you don't work for it, you're not going to receive it. If we want to become a divine person on earth, then we have to work for that. And how do we work for it? We work for it by challenging the situations that we receive and learning the skills and tools that we need to be successful in overcoming and mastering that situation. For example, most of the time when people come together in relationships, they come together based on some external factor. They like the way the person looks. They like, and we're talking about Western culture now, not that this is not important, but this is pretty much the basis of the coming together in Western society. They like the way the person looks. They like the way the person talks. They like the way the person walks. They like the job the person's got. They like the car. They like the house. There's always some external factor that we're looking at when we're choosing a mate. Now, nothing in the world is permanent. As Chinua Achebe said, things fall apart. So if it is that I've come together with this person simply because I like the job that they do, what's going to happen in that relationship if they lose that job? Because no job is permanent. What's going to happen in our relationship if that's the basis of our coming together? If I like the way the person looks, what's going to happen in that relationship if there's something that alters the age or some other calamity that alters that person, the way a person looks, or the way what the person likes? People come together because they both like to go bowling, for example. What happens if someone is not able to go bowling anymore? You know, they pull a muscle, or they wrench their arm, or some accident or whatever. If the basis of why we come together is based on some external factor, then that relationship is going to be challenged if that external factor is going to be altered. And most often they are going to be altered because things fall apart. Nothing is permanent. But in traditional Africa, from the perspective that we're going to be addressing in the conference, if I come together to become a divine man, my goal in life is to become a divine man, and I understand that the manifestation of that divinity is what I must do to the challenges of circumstances in my life, then as I meet challenges, I'm going to look at those challenges through this prism of what a divine person looks like. What does God look like? Well, we have these 11 laws that we use to evaluate divine spirit and manifestation in the world. And so if I'm looking at my life, my circumstance, my relationship, through the prism of these 11 laws, then whatever the situation, whatever the challenge is, I have the understanding and the ability to not only master that situation and alter it and change with that situation, but to also cultivate and develop that spirit, that part, functional part of the spirit within me, so that now the relationship becomes a viable tool for me achieving the ultimate goal, which is achieving my divinity. And that's not going to alter. If we come together based on our, like for bowling, and one of us stops bowling, or say they close down all the bowling alleys, what happens to our relationship?
Mm-hmm.
If we come together out of our understanding that we both are here to become a divine being, a divine man and a divine woman, that's never going to be changed, because that's always going to be the goal of our life. Now, we may stop trying to match it, meet up to it, accomplish it. That's another factor. But at least the goal is not going to change. So our objective is not going to change. And if that's the goal of the relationship, to become a divine man or a divine woman, also going to be the goal of our family, to manifest an environment through which and within which not only our children understand that that's their goal of life, but we give them the tools necessary to, when they step out into the world, to move forward toward accomplishing the challenges that they face from that same perspective. So that's the important thing. It's why are we coming together? What's the purpose of relating? What's the purpose of family? Family is about establishing stability in society. What's the stability? What does the stability in society rest on? It rests on our divine personalities. It rests on our spiritual values, our spiritual essence. It rests on our moral accomplishment, our seeking to accomplish things and work in a moral and spiritual way. But we're only able to do that if we understand, one, that that's the goal of life, and two, if we understand the techniques necessary to make that happen. Because talk doesn't cook the food. I can say, I come to earth to be a divine being. I can say, I come to earth to overcome the sin within me. But I need some skills, some tools to make that happen. And the understanding that we're going to be giving people in this conference is that there's four different parts of our brain. And this brain that we have, these four brains, rather, influence our behaviors. You know, the brain is the organ through which we interact with our environment, right? So if I'm allowing the lower parts of the brain, what we call the animal parts of the brain, to dictate my behaviors, which is what most people do, because the lower parts of the animal parts of the brain are the parts of the brain that respond to stimuli based on external factors, how something appears, looks, smells, tastes, etc., the vibe, so to speak. That's how animals respond to things. Animals respond to things out of their conditioning to that situation in the environment. So if I like the way that person looks, then that's the peacock function within me.
Mm-hmm.
If I like the way that person smells, then that may be the dog within me.
Mm-hmm.
So each animal has its own sensual proclivity, so to speak. If I like the way the person moves, that starts a snake within me.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these zoo factors within us that we allow to make our decisions, not just in relationships, but in life in general. We eat because we like the way something tastes, or we like the way it looks, or we like the way it smells. So this same animal behavior permeates the whole of our experiences. And most devastatingly, and all of it impacts our ability to function efficiently and correctly in relationships. So now there's another part of the brain, the human part of the brain. Now the human part of the brain is the part of the brain we send to school. And why do we send it to school? So it can learn how to make tools or how to manipulate tools to earn a living. So that's the human part of the brain. But the human part of the brain, that part of the brain that gets the bachelor's or the doctor's or master's or whatever, does not know the difference between right and wrong. And that's the critical piece. If it cannot determine the difference between right and wrong, that means it's going to be guessing at situations and circumstances. That means that at best, you might come up with a 50% opportunity to get things right or wrong. So we wonder why, if people are using the human brain to make decisions in relationships, first of all, they're using the animal brain to get into relationships. Then they're using the human brain, which doesn't know the difference between right and wrong, right? Because the human brain functions on belief. And when I say I believe something, that means I don't know, right?
True.
So if I'm believing and my belief is not in sync with what's accurate, which it oftentimes is not going to be, then I'm going to have mistakes, I'm going to make problems, I'm going to have failures because I'm simply playing a roulette game. And the odds on the roulette wheel might be better than in many relationships because of the lack of training, the lack of the reliance on the human part of the brain to make a decision. I want you people to think about this. I'm going to slow down for 1 second to emphasize this point. There's a lot of problems in the world, not just in relationships, but in the world, period. And I want you to think about all the problems that you know in the world. And conclude this one, and agree with this one conclusion, that all of the problems that are in the world, that we have in the world, are the result of humans.
With you. Mm-hmm.
So if humans are the source of the problems in the world, can they be the source of the solution? As Malcolm X said, you don't take your case to the criminal, you take your criminal to court. I mean, you got to have a higher authority through which to correct the problems that you're facing. And fortunately for us, our ancestors understood and nourished and taught and put systems in place to cultivate that higher authority within man. And that higher authority is the prefrontal cortex of our brain, which is the fourth brain. And when you read the literature on the prefrontal cortex, it says the role of the prefrontal cortex is to, one, control the influences of the animal parts of the brain. Two, to develop the ability for a person to respond in a moral and spiritual way to circumstances in life. So if the problem we have in relationships are based on the culture, Western culture, and Western culture is predominantly controlled by the animal parts of the brain, the four senses, the five senses, and the human part of the brain, but lack of spiritual cultivation for the prefrontal cortex, then the solution to our relationships is to look at it from the African perspective, where our ancestors not only understood this, but cultivated processes and doctrines to influence people's behavior to cultivate the prefrontal cortex of the brain. For example, in ancient, the prefrontal cortex is in the center of the forehead. Now, we find that many traditions will do spiritual things to the forehead. They'll put water on it or whatever. But why the forehead? Well, in ancient Kemet, our ancestors referred to the forehead as Kente. And when you read the Kemetic scriptures and the descriptions of Kente, they say that, amongst other things, it's great to call Kente, one, the Holy of Holies, meaning the most spiritual part of the temple, is the Holy of Holies, right? They also say it's the seat for Osir. Now, Osir in ancient Kemet is the term for the man or woman who has overcome sin in their life and is now living as a divine being, has become a God-man or a God-woman. So our ancestors were very clear about the focus of the, and the authority of the prefrontal cortex in their lives. But not only that, sciences have determined that meditation will not only strengthen but enlarge the prefrontal cortex, which means it gives it more power, more authority, more ability to do what it's supposed to do, which is controlling the animal influences as well as to influence spiritual and moral behavior. So when we look into the world and we see a lot of people functioning in a lot of different ways, which are not spiritual, not moral, you know, functioning out of their animal instincts, their animal brains, their human brains, etc., then we shouldn't wonder or worry that about the situation. We should understand that the solution is in our African traditions, our African culture. And all we have to do now is go back to that culture, learn that culture, apply the principles of that culture and the techniques that our ancestors put in place in order to develop the culture and develop our persons, which enable us to develop our families, which enable us to develop our communities. We wonder why our communities are in the state they are in, because it's that pool again. It's that Western cultural lake that we're all swimming in, which is polluted. And with Trump in office, it's going to get more polluted already. Behind the climate change situation, which means the earth is going to be more challenged. So the fact that we have more challenge means that we have more responsibility to address this challenge. And that's what we're going to be addressing at this conference. 2 days of intense information, but also application. Because we're not only just giving information, we're going to give the techniques and the application of the information toward the goal. The goal is improving on our functioning as men and women in our relationships.
Could we talk for a moment, Brother Orwah, about success and successful relationships? Because there may be somebody out there that's listening, and we know, as you outlined earlier, you know, purpose coming together to relate to one another is, of course, to become osir, to become kings. And the people that are closest to us are in the family, our mates and our children. So somebody might think that a successful relationship would be devoid of challenges that come from within that family structure. They might think that, well, okay, I know I'm going to have challenges, but if I'm in a successful, quote-unquote, relationship, then those challenges won't come from my mate. Those challenges won't come from my children. They might come from the job. They might come from the neighbors. You know, they might. Could you talk about a successful relationship, and that a successful relationship does not necessarily mean that your challenge you or be the source of the challenge? And if in fact the mate or children is the source of the challenge, that does not mean necessarily that the relationship is unsuccessful.
Quite to the contrary, the family is the place where you're going to have the greatest challenges, because it's the time, it's the space where you spend the most time and you have the closest proximity. So we understand that the reason why we go into families is the family is like a pressure cooker, right? You want to cook some rice, you boil some water in a pan, you cover the pan, and in 45 minutes is done. You put that same rice in a pressure cooker, you get it done in 2 or 3 moments. So the goal is, again, we come to earth to learn, and we learn to experience. So the thing we need to learn are how to function in every given situation and apply these 11 laws, which are the essence of our being, how we apply these 11 laws to circumstances in our lives. So the family is going to give us the most opportunity to apply these laws, because you may not have the close, you're going to have opportunities everywhere, but you're going to have more opportunities within family. And the closer the family, the more opportunities. So family is an opportunity for us to increase and move forward with volume in terms of the accomplishment of our ultimate goal, becoming a divine being. It's the family that is going to provide the greatest challenge, which also provides the greatest reward.
Could you talk, Brother Orwah, about peace to pleasure versus pleasure to pain? I started off the show with the beginning of a song, and I'll play it again at the end. And this song is a beautiful song, but it really illustrates how most people live their lives in terms of their relationships. Many might remember the song by Mother's Finest, "Love Changes." Love will make you oh so happy. Love will make you oh so sad. Love will make you cry, you know. And in this song, it's people involved in this relationship, or her experience at least, is expressing that love is such this entity, it will make you happy, it will make you cry. And we know that how emotions vacillate from pleasure to pain. Could you talk about that? And in relationships, how, of course, that's how we've been taught in this muddied pool that you talk about, this polluted pool, that's normal in being relationships. That's just part of being human. Could you talk about that?
Well, first, let's go back to, we talk about the 11 laws, right? And one of those laws is love. But the love from the African perspective is not the same as what you're talking about. That is something else. That's called passion. That's called sensuality or whatever. Love is not an emotion as such. Love is the understanding that everything in the world is a part of one whole. And therefore, my giving in any given situation is something that's done selflessly, because there's only one self, so to speak. Or as the law of Mahat says, God needs us to come into the world. Meaning, and to truly understand, we have to go back and look at what's the purpose of life? What's the basis of life? What is life? And from the African perspective, it's understanding that the God, the Supreme Being, has two functional aspects. One is consciousness. That's the part of the being which perceives and evaluates and directs reality. And the other is spirit. And that's the part of the being that implements the direction and makes the direction happen in the world. Or otherwise said, the will, which is the factor of our being, which do which you make decisions, and energy matter, that which is manipulated by the will. So if this is the case, if God is, why did God create the world? What's the purpose of creation? If God is, in essence, an omniscient, meaning all-knowing, and omnipresent reality, omnipotent reality, why create a world? I mean, if I'm already all-knowing, what am I going to create something else to know? If I'm already everywhere, why am I creating some place to be? And if already I'm all-powerful, why am I expressing my power to make something happen when I have all the power necessary to make things happen? Well, the essence is this, that if we look at it like from this perspective, to be all present or omnipresent means to be everywhere. But prior to manifestation, prior to creation, what we call the Supreme Being is in the energy is in a dormant state. It's an unformed state. It's an unlimited, boundless state of being. So there's no thing there. There's no places there. It's just one big mass of energy, so to speak. Or if you want to use that old song about clay, imagine that, mm-hmm. you know, because clay is the greatest, right? I mean, that's what the man said. Imagine it's the essential state that the spirit is just an endless glob of clay. There's nothing there. There's no things there. There's energy there. There's matter there, but it hasn't been formed into anything yet. So when I take a lump of that clay and I create a man, or I create a tree, or I create an animal, or I create a plant, or wind, or water, or air, then what I'm doing is I'm creating places to be. And the only way to be omnipresent is to create all possible places and be there. Same thing with omniscience. Omniscience means to be all-knowing. But you know things. You can only know things. And if in its essential state, the Supreme Being state, there are no things, there's just energy matter, which hasn't been formed in anything yet, then the purpose of creating all things imaginable or possible is to come into the world and experience that omniscience, to know these things. That's what experience is based on. As the ancient Kabbalah says, to know truth, you must live it. As above, so below. If I must know, for me to know truth, I must live it, then so it is from heaven. For God to know truth, God must also live it. God creates it, but then God must experience it in order to know it. So the purpose of the world and all these things is to provide opportunities and vehicles for the Supreme Being to experience itself and to grow and to become through the manifest its true self. So when we talk about Ma'at then, what we're saying is God needs me to come into the world, meaning if God, prior to manifestation and creation, God is just an unlimited being. But in order to experience itself, God created me. I'm the vessel through which God is going to experience itself. And providing God the opportunity to experience itself is the highest aspect of love. That's what true love is. Allowing for God, for me, to be a vehicle through which the divine is experienced on the earth. And if I take that approach to my relationship, then I'm also going to realize that my mate is also a vehicle through which God is expressing itself in the world. And so once we get comes to this understanding, then we know that Well, the things that we're experiencing during the course of our lives are all just circumstances that are there to promote the understanding and the manifestation and the realization of the God in the world through me. So love, then, we have to deal with the understanding that love is not an emotion. It's not what I feel when someone is attracted to me. You know, that could probably be, some instability in my stomach or something. I got indigestion or something. You know, people know about how to get lightheaded. If you were to go to a doctor, and you were to go to the doctor and say, "Well, doc, I get kind of lightheaded in these circumstances. I get butterfly in my stomach. You know, I feel like I can't focus." You know, the doctor's trying to find some drugs for you. But now you're going to tell me, the circumstances I have is whenever I see her, these things begin to happen. So that's not love. That's some physiological manifestation of what we otherwise would call an illness. But the solution is to recognize and realize that, yeah, I may be attracted to this person, but what's the basis of the attraction? Am I being attracted to them so that I can use this opportunity to manifest my divinity on earth? Or am I just allowing the animal parts of my brain to dominate my behaviors? So, you know, the Western culture panders people with this idea that love is a visceral response, has something to do with some visceral experience I have in my body or whatever. When in reality, true love is understanding that everything in this world is here as a vehicle through which God, my true identity, is to be manifested. And if I approach life from that perspective, then I don't have to worry about whether I have pain, because pain is not a part of the reality of the divine being. Pleasure and peace are the solution. I have peace because that's my true nature. I enjoy the things I have when I need them and when I have them. If I lose them, I enjoy the peace. Which goes back to what we said a while back in our conversation, that if we come together based on external factors, and what happens when those external factors change? So this is say that we come together because we both like bowling, and we live in an area, and then we move someplace, and there's no bowling. So there's nothing, quote-unquote, that's holding us together. So the pleasure part of our experience was that the bowling was there for us. But if we lose the bowling, what do we have? Well, we have the peace. We enjoy the peace itself. We enjoy bowling. Bowling is no longer there. So now I enjoy peace, because peace is the highest expression of my being. Peace is the only thing that can't harm me. Everything else can harm me. Joy in moderation is linked to peace, is beneficial, but joy, if it's not linked to peace, can be harmful. Everyone that has a problem, a serious problem, drug addicts or whomever, they really enjoy that crack. So, but joy is a factor of our being. Joy is one of the 11 laws of our being. So the problem is not joy. The problem is the application of joy, the understanding of joy, the hierarchy that joy plays in life. So we have to really have to go back to these 11 laws, these 11 values, these 11 standards that we have to base and live our lives around. And if we're doing that, then whatever the circumstances we experience in our relationships or in other parts of our lives, then we will always have a barometer, to keep us on point. We'll always have a weather vane pointing in the right, a compass to point us in the right direction. This is true north. We're always going to go true north to get to the promised land, right? Heaven, etc.
Let's talk for a moment about the incarnation objective and how that relates to the relationship piece, because you might have two different groups of people. For example, those who may already be married, have already been married for years, and then after having chosen a mate and having children, then they come into the knowledge of the comedic information, the comedic knowledge, the comedic spirituality. Then they come into the knowledge of the 11 laws and so forth. And then you have another group who are hearing this show who have not yet committed to a relationship, a mate relationship, and are planning and preparing, and they want to do it right, and they're hearing this. What role would the incarnation objective of the two individuals play? Because, for example, in Western astrology, for example, you might take some people who are really into the horoscope, and they might say, "Well, now if you're a Pisces, you don't want to mess with them Sagittarius, you know, they crazy, you know, or whatever the different ones that they would not deal with based on a particular sign." When it comes to the incarnation objective and relationships, would there be any such harmony or disharmony based on a particular IO, or would it just depend individually on a person's particular lesson and what the other person or mate brings to the table in terms of their own individual lessons to learn as well?
Okay, well, let's do this, because you laid out the premise, the track, one of the tracks of the first day of the conference, and that there will be a general overview where we'll talk about some of the things we're talking about now and some other things, but then there will be two tracks. There will be a track for single people who are not in a committed relationship, and then there will be a track for people who are in a committed relationship. And in the single track, the goal will be preparing yourself for entering a relationship, and then entering a relationship. For those who are in relationships, the goal will be strengthening and developing relationships. So we're going to be looking at it from those two tracks, and then everybody will come together at the end of that day, and we'll have a general discussion and lecture. That's when the Queen Mother from New York, Ms. Marisa Amin, will come down and make her presentation in terms of the importance of family. So that outline, that lays out the first day. So within the context of that, what you're saying is that the incarnation objective is, for those who may not be familiar with that, it's a spiritual reading that we do that enables us to know, well, what is my particular lessons that I need to learn during this lifetime? For example, everyone comes to Earth to become a God-man or a God-woman. But we all come to Earth at different stages, different positions, different angles. So we have different approaches. So my incarnation objective is going to identify, well, what are the specific paths or lessons that I need to learn, which are going to be different than the lessons that you need to learn, even though we're both going to the same place. It's like if we want to go to New York, for example, there's different roads we can take to get to New York. So I may be on one road, you may be on another road, they may cross, intersect, whatever. But there's always different roads to get there, but we're going to the same place. So once I've identified what my incarnation objective is, and then once I come together with someone else and we begin to look at our different paths toward the same goal, then we understand that we're going to have different experiences, different challenges, different perspectives, we're going to go about making decisions in a different way. But as long as we have the requisite information, then we understand what's moving each of us so we can work with one another to help us compensate for one another. It's not just, relationships are not always based on everything being alike. Two people can be so much alike that they bore one another to death.
Mm-hmm.
Or they constantly look at see themselves in the other person, and things they don't like about themselves, they begin to project that onto the other person. Two people could be opposites and not see how they can work together. But see, it's all about understanding that once we come together, which is the other reading that will be done for everyone there, is your preparation for a relationship. Once you have those situations under your hand, and you know that, well, if we have an opposite of the circumstance and situation, then we can be a partnership on one level. If we have the same approach to the circumstance and situation, then we are more focused, more driven toward accomplishing that. So there's no such thing as a bad combination of forces. It's a situation of bad understanding and preparation for functioning through those circumstances. Because everyone's going to have challenges. Everyone's going to have circumstances that they have to address. The problem is not that I have challenges. The problem is that I don't address those challenges properly, that I don't have the skills or develop the tools to address the situation properly and to work with a person who's wants to understand what our strengths are and our weaknesses are. Then we can work to supplement one another, to complement one another, to help one another grow and develop, which is ultimately what it's all about. It's about, we talk about unity. The problem in the black community is no unity. Well, unity is not everybody being the same. Unity is identifying common objectives and identifying the role that we each of us play toward the fulfillment of that common objective. So that's what the destiny reading does, the incarnation reading, and the preparation reading. Those two readings, which we'll be discussing, showing people how to use them. We'll be doing the readings for those people who don't have them. Those two readings give the roadmap that each person needs to follow toward being successful in the relationship. And if I come together with you, and you and I have different roadmaps, but we understand where we're going and how we got to get there, then we can help one another make that same transition, make that course. So that's where the value of the destiny readings and spiritual readings and the African approach to relationships in life in general comes from. We're not coming together based on our like or dislike of this or that. We're coming together based on our commitment to awakening our divinity, to becoming a God man or a God woman. And then we're identifying, well, what are the challenges, what are the tools, what are the assets, what are the liabilities that each of us has toward that accomplishment so we can work together to make this thing work for the whole. Because unity is again, coming together and reconciling our differences toward, as the law of Osiris says, which is the concept of unity, the principle of unity in ancient Kemet, there's no enemies. Nothing is against me. So my mate is not against me, even though we may have different perspectives. They're not against me. We're all working toward the same goal. All we need to know is what are the challenges, what are the tools, what are the paths that we each need to follow, and how can I help each other? How can we help one another to make that a successful transition, a successful development, successful relationship? And that's the goal of the relationships. And since we're talking about the scope of the conference or the flow of the conference, on the second day, then we'll break it out into male and female, because there's specific approaches and understandings that men are going to have relative to women in terms of how they move toward addressing situations. And we need to understand one another. So we'll come together collectively after that and make that unified understanding of, as men and women, these are how we have to work together toward accomplishing the goal of our relationship, the goal which is establishing a strong family, which is going to improve the society in which we live, which enable us to build a strong national presence as African people in the Western Hemisphere.
Brother Horwa, in the remaining moments, could you talk about patience for a moment? Because there may be people out there who've come to this information. You might have mates there who have come to this information. They may be giving this information to their mates, and they may experience frustration, or if their mate doesn't seem to be getting it, or just being patient with the individual, not remembering that, hey, this is a shift that needs to take place, and it doesn't happen overnight. You know, could you just talk about the need for, even in relationships, if you say you understand the purpose of relationships, you understand that the purpose of being in a relationship is to experience and express your divinity, then part of that expression, I would assume, would be patience in dealing with those who might not reach the level that you are on. Sometimes we get a little knowledge and then it goes to our head, and we get impatient with other people who don't appear to be moving or learning or grasping as fast as we would like. Could you talk about patience for a moment?
Sure. Well, I'm going to use the word patience and as a pun, because remember back at the beginning, we talked about how the problem is the pool. We're all swimming in this polluted lake, and so we're all sick. So we're all patients, and we need to get healed. So the healing is from the perspective of if we're all ill, then the problem is not us. Again, it's back to what we said earlier. The problem is not my mate. The problem is not me. The problem is the culture that we've been swimming in, the culture we've been developed in or misdeveloped in. So what we have to do is to heal ourselves from this situation. So the fact that we're patients means that not all patients need the same remedy at the same point in time. But as long as we're willing to make the correction, as long as we realize first that we're sick, because a lot of people don't even realize they're sick until it's possibly too late. But as long as we understand that we're all illing, we'd be illing, as the folks used to say, then
right.
we have to find out and work on cultivating the healing that's necessary. Because ultimately, this culture has been, we're all damaged through years and generations of abuse. Abuse of alcohol, abuse of sugar, abuse of drugs, abuse of toxic diet. So we got all these things that adversely impact our body's ability to function, and the body and the mind are synchronistic entities. They work together in syncretism. So if one of them is sick, then it's going to affect the ability of the other. So if I'm eating, if I'm constantly, and my father smoked cigarettes, and his father smoked cigarettes, and I become the offspring of this genetic pool of damaged genes from cigarette smoke or marijuana or sugar or whatever, then I understand that there's issues that I'm going to have, there's issues my mate's going to have, which are not them of their own cause, but something
right.
inherited. So we got to learn to understand that we're all patients. We need to be patient with the patients as we work for healing.
Everybody, I know that after hearing this information, this interview today, that you're going to want to run to the Synbev Wellness Complex on Saturday, June the 17th, and Sunday, June the 18th, for the 2017 African Spiritual Relationship Conference. You've got to be there. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this conference could be the best, most informative, life-changing conference that you will ever in your life attend, okay? And judging from the conversation that I just had with Orwa today, I know that you got to be there. You just have to be there. Make it a point. And if you register by tomorrow, you get 10% discount, okay? It's been extended through tomorrow, okay? So you want to make sure that if you're planning on going, that you register by tomorrow, and you can take advantage of that discount. Now, let me tell you where it is. Okay, it's going to be at the Synbev Wellness Complex, and that's at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., and that's zip code 20011 in case you need to MapQuest it. If you need to call for any information, please dial 202-355-6. Again, that's 202-723-556. So that you don't show up at the door saying, "I thought it was free." If you're single, it's $70 admission. That is, of course, if you don't take advantage of the early bird discount. And for couples, $125. And children between the ages of 5 and 12 are admitted absolutely free. Now, let me say this. Don't even consider the price, all right, because just the reading alone, okay, you're going to get that. That comes with the price. For the price of admission, you also get, it's $50 value just with admission, you get a meditation template, You get a spiritual reading. You get an Accugraph digital meridian scan, okay? So just for the price of admission, just the reading alone, if that changes your life, it's worth so much more than the price of admission. So don't even consider that. That's a drop in the bucket compared to what it is that you're going to receive at this conference. And let me tell you a little bit about the Sinbad Wellness Complex, too, in case you've never been there. They have vegan food there on site. I mean, if you never tasted vegan food before and you're interested, you definitely want to take advantage of that when you get there. Stop in the cafe and get something to eat. They've also got books. They've also got clothes. They've got accessories, okay? So you can't lose this. And let's say for whatever reason you can't attend the conference, you still go by the complex, okay? That is not an excuse to not go by the complex. You still want to go by the complex because, again, like I said, they've got vegetarian food, they've got accessories, they've got books, they've got clothes, I mean, and they've got good people, so you definitely want to make it there. So let me give the information one more time. This is something that can change your life. It may well be the most important conference that you will ever attend in your life. It is Saturday, June the 17th, and Sunday, June the 18th, and it is the 2017 African Spiritual Relationship Conference. And with that, you're going to learn how to prepare for building, maintaining your African spiritual relationships, identifying traditional African factors which can add value to your health, your well-being, your successful functioning in relationships with your partners, your family, and your community. And you definitely want to make sure that you're there. And the keynote speaker is going to be Nesut Marisa Amen. She's the Queen Mother of the Osiriset Society International. So make it a point to get there. Brother Orwa, I have a couple of other announcements to make, but did you have anything that we haven't covered so far that you would like to add before we close the show today?
No, I'm good. So thank you again for giving us this platform, and we look forward to seeing all of you there. Thank you. Atep.
Atep. Awesome. He just presented this in such an awesome, awesome way. Let me get to the other announcements. For those of you who don't know, this upcoming, well, not this upcoming, but next Saturday, the 17th also is going to be the date of the third annual Jawanza for Life Health and Wellness Symposium. Just so happens, can you believe it? It would happen to fall on the same day because I wanted to be at the conference. But I have a workshop. It's on the Saturday, June the 17th as well, and that's 2017, of course. That's from 1 to 5 p.m. It's the third annual Jawanza for Life Health and Wellness Symposium, and that's going to be held at 9300 Livingston Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. The zip code there is 20744. I've got three fabulous speakers lined up. You're all familiar with Coy Dunstan, owner and operator of Secrets of Nature in Washington, D.C. He's cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, the liver, and the colon. He's going to be a presenter. Also, Dr. Ted Watkins, you may have heard him on WPFW. He has a show that comes on WPFW. He used to be a medical surgeon. I mean, he knows the body inside out. He's going to be one of my special guests, as well as Dr. Ruby Lathan. She's cured herself of thyroid cancer after the doctors had given her a diagnosis of thyroid cancer, and they wanted to remove the thyroid, and she was like, no, I don't think so. Let me do some research. And within a year, she changed her lifestyle to a plant-based whole foods diet and cured the thyroid cancer. Brother Coy cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, the liver, and the colon. Okay, so the theme for this symposium is food, healing, and the brain. Food, healing, and the brain. Now, we're not going to be approaching the brain from the standpoint of four different brains, the animal brain, the mammalian brain, the neocortex, and the prefrontal lobe. We're just going to be looking at nutrients and how eating a healthy, Whole foods, plant-based diet can add to the health and wellness and proper functioning of your brain, okay, or brains. So that's the approach that we're going to be using on the 17th. So let me tell you again, that's going to be, and you're totally invited. By the way, it's free. The parking is free. The event is free. And we certainly would love to have you there. My mate, Aquia Chefs Natea, is going to be there too. So please, if you're not doing anything on the Saturday, this June the 17th, if you're not going to be at the Osirisset Society on Simba, which I know you're going to be, but I want you to invite you to come on out and spend some time with us as well. Again, that's Saturday, June the 17th from 1 to 5 p.m. at 9300 Livingston Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. My special guests are going to be Brother Coy Dunstan, Dr. Ruby Lathan, and Dr. Ted Watkins, and we're going to be talking about food, healing, and the brain. So spread the word and bring somebody with you. Also, on July the 8th, all right, that's Saturday, July the 8th, same place, 9300 Livingston Road, Fort Washington, Maryland. Aquia Chefs Natea, by the way, is a real estate broker in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. So we're going to be doing a workshop and helping people to prepare to buy a home, okay? If you're a first-time home buyer, it's actually for first-time home buyers. It's the first-time home buyer workshop. So Aquia Chefs Natea, as well as Sister Lisa Perry, are going to be the presenters at that. Aquia Chefs Natea will present on the role of the real estate agent. Lisa Perry will present on personal finance, credit reporting, and the role of the lender. So if you're in the process or thinking about buying a home and you need to know the process, and you do need to know the process, okay, come out. This is free as well. A lot of times when people talk about relationships, some of the issues that come up are this finances. I mean, that's a big piece, right? So, and if you happen to be in a relationship and you think you're ready to make that move, then come on out and get some free information on the process to buying a home, okay? So, but again, I want to make sure that everybody knows that this conference on relationships could be the conference that changes your life. I mean, your life. So now, you heard the information. You heard the powerful interview with Orwa. Now, the next thing you do is show up. Okay? I cannot stress enough the importance of this workshop. I'm sorry, I keep calling it a workshop by habit. This conference where you're going to receive information on the most precious aspect of your life, your relationships. And it's not just mate relationships. It's relationships with your children, okay, which is so very important because you're raising the future. So if you know what relationships are all about, if you know why you're here, if you know the purpose of life, if you know the reason why your children are here, then that's the foundation, and we can start the process of changing that muddy pool, that polluted pool that Orwa was talking about, into a crystal blue, clear, nutritious, nurturing pool where we can all grow from and grow in. So make sure that on Saturday, June the 17th, and Sunday, June the 18th, that you are at the Sinbeb Wellness Complex at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. And again, the admission is just $70 for singles and just $125 for couples. Your children, if they're between 5 and 12, they get in free. And with that, in addition to all of the information, you're going to get a meditation template, spiritual readings, Accugraph digital meridian scans, and so much more. So make sure that you get by there. And remember, the keynote speaker is going to be Queen Mother Nesut Marisa Amin. If you've never heard her, this is your opportunity. So everybody, I want to say thank you so much for your time, and I'm going to play this song, okay, because this illustrates, this is part of the pool that we grew up in, okay? We've sung this song, okay? We've rocked back and forth to this song. We fell in love on this song, but guess what? This song is part of what Orwa was talking about. This song was part of that pleasure to pain, pain to pleasure cycle that many people go through. And I guarantee you, after this show, you will never view this song again. And I guarantee you, when you go to the workshop, you'll be so glad that you did. Who am I? My name's Jawanza. I'm the one who, in giving, receives more.